Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, it's a jungle out there. We've got Republicans in Florida hole up in Tampa right now. Hatches are batten down. But thank goodness, looks like Isaac's going to treat Florida fairly gently. And with that, on with the show. I'm your host, Rick Spezak, Progressive News Network's news director. I want to thank my co-producer, Ms. Mickey Royce, for all the fine work she does to help me put these shows together. I want to tell you, I've got some great guests, as always. Got Dr. DeLuca, who's going to talk about the effects of genetically modified foods on the human digestive system and human health. Then we've got Trish Sheldon, one of the finest Floridians involved in GM activism. We've got Matt Keating from Credo. They're very involved in truth-telling and getting the word to everybody who Congressman West is trying to pull the wool over. Then we've got Gail Foth from Stand Up Florida, who's also going to be talking about their work today out in Tampa as the welcoming party to the RNC. And also we've got a nice report from Ray Siemens, the founder of Awake the State, and also the online director of Progress Florida. And our good friend Meredith Ackman, who is Vice President of Now Florida and President of Now Palm Beach, is going to give us a report on women's equality last week, Women's Equality Day at FAU last weekend. Today also we want to still continue to celebrate Women's Equality Days. It was 92 years ago that women in the United States were granted the right to vote. And it seems as if they had their way. Republicans still don't think the women are intelligent enough to control their own bodies. They'd just as soon legislate that. Amazing to me, this party that pretends to want to get government off our backs instead wants to insert it forcibly into somebody's uterus. There you go. Well, it's up to us, ladies and gentlemen, to stand up to that kind of nonsense and all the other medievalisms that they're selling us. Okay. I got some news for you. In terms of upcoming events, we've got Planned Parenthood's got a big pink bus rally set at UCF on August 28th from 4 to 6 p.m., Planned Parenthood Action Funds, PPAF, Big Pink Bus will be touring the nation and making a stop in Orlando, Florida. The bus will be parked at UCF's Recreation and Wellness Center and will attract supporters from across the region. We have excellent speakers lined up for the rally and will lead to volunteers out to canvas afterwards. If you're driving to the rally and do not have a UCF decal, the cost to park will be $5. Garage B will be the best garage to park in. Rain may interfere with the event, so stay tuned for updates. Planned Parenthood has a rally in Tampa. Many of you have signed up to join PPAF in Tampa for the Women Are Watching rally being held at RNC Convention Wednesday, August 29th. An incredibly exciting trip and free to all attendees. They'll be leaving Orlando at 12 and should hopefully return by 6 p.m. The bus pickup location in Orlando will be the UCF bus station between Garage A and Garage I. Guests at the campus may park in either parking garage for the purchase of a $5 parking decal. It's going to be a long day. We would encourage everyone to bring snacks. There's a peace rally coming up in Tampa. The Vigil for Peace has IVAW, VFP, MSFC, and Code Pink. The date is August 29th, 2012. And that's at Crosstown Mobile, 3699 West Gandy Boulevard, Tampa. There'll be ample parking available at the Publix and Target lots on Gandy. August 30th, War versus Human Needs. Bring a dish. Eat and socialize. You want to get in touch with Bob Bender for that information. Also, Democracy Now! Is coming to Sarasota. You're invited to join Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! For a special event to benefit WSLR 96.5 LPFM on Friday, August 31st at 12 p.m. Please share the event with friends and family who know the area. Walk for Children of Syria, Saturday, September 8th. And that's from 5 to 7 p.m. Bayfront Park in Miami. It's downtown Miami by the Torch of Friendship, 301 North Biscayne Boulevard. There's a National Call-In Day, September 24th. Call the Assistant U.S. Attorney Barry Jonas at 312-353-5300, extension 68027. Tell him to end the investigation of anti-war and international solidarity activists. And don't forget, the Space Coast Progressive Alliance, the Progressive Fest, Community in Action, that's Sunday, October 21st. There's still room to get your table. Be there, my friends. It's an incredible event. Really something you'll enjoy. In terms of news, my goodness gracious me, you know, people have expressed their concern about things posted on Facebook. Well, we've got a situation here where Facebook ended up, a gentleman posted his concerns about the government lying about 9/11, his thoughts that government officials should be arrested. He was rounded up by the FBI and the Secret Service and the local police. They didn't arrest him. They just booked him into a psychiatric hospital for a weekend. And this was up in Virginia. And they say that over 20,000 people in Virginia alone are committed to civil commitments in VA, in the Virginia mental health facilities. Incredible. His name is Mr. Rob, and you can check it out. There's reports in the Times-Dispatch, and you can read more about it. The FBI, Secret Service, and Chesterfield County Police Department came to his door Thursday evening and questioned Rob about the Facebook post. Then they handcuffed him and placed him in the Chesterfield PD. The FBI and the Secret Service said Rob was not arrested or charged, but the Rutherford Institute statement said that if police have put handcuffs on you and you're being held against your will, it sounds like an arrest to him. Yes, indeedy. Facebook posting earns man a weekend in the psychiatric hospital. Finally, he was released on Monday. The judge says, you know, you can't do this. Record radiation has been found off Japan. Record levels of radioactive cesium were detected in fish caught within 20 kilometers of Japan's damaged Fukushima. The operator of Tokyo Electric Power Company said Tuesday it had found 25,800 becquerels per kilogram of radioactive cesium in Greenling, and 258 times higher than the government's safety allowance. And you know those things are so, so strict. Oh, yeah. More GM food data. Southern California remains the proverbial battlefield for GM labeling, with increased interest growing over ways to actually start avoiding GM in your daily life. By far the best tip, which may not be applicable all times, is to stick to high-quality organic sources, preferably 100% organic or locally grown by organic-based farmers. This certainly is not always an option. So a list was compiled, a cheat sheet, the top genetically modified crops and substances that you can remember when avoiding GMOs in your daily life. Produce items like yellow squash, papaya are considered by many worldwide to be health foods. However, chances are these foods are among the eight others the person will be describing as heavily, heavily genetically modified. A number of non-organic food products all actually do exist that are free of GMOs. It's important to learn the deceptive marketing tricks used by fake health-conscious brands who only wish to trick you into purchasing their GMO-laden garbage. Top list for avoiding GMOs: corn, soy, sugar, papayas, aspartame, canola, zucchini, yellow squash, dairy. More than one-third of non-organic dairy products in the United States still contain Monsanto's genetically engineered hormone known as RBGH, made from clone DNA. The hormone is currently banned in over 27 countries. Tampa authorities empty their jails in anticipation of mass arrests at the GOP convention. Now, isn't that hospitality? I'll tell you, friends. And this you got to hear. This is a poetic treatment of the Atkins axiom about legitimate and illegitimate rapes and, of course, the magical power of women to detect the difference. You can get pregnant in a car. You can get pregnant in a bar. You can get pregnant on a hill. You can get pregnant on the pill. You can get pregnant near or far. It doesn't matter who you are. You can get pregnant in a house. You can get pregnant by a louse. You can get pregnant here or there. You can get pregnant anywhere. In a plane, on a train, in a box, or with a fox. Standing up or sitting down, it matters not when sperm's around. You can get pregnant if you're raped. You try science truths you can't escape. I do not like the awful lies that hurt ones whom it implies can control their conception through legitimate rape sperm detection. You should not lead our sacred land if anti-science is your plan. I do not like what you are saying. I do not like it, Mr. Aiken. And that's by Christy Kane, something that I thought you should definitely hear. And by the way, Julian Assange, the threats of Britain to raid the Bolivian embassy have been peeled back, so says the embassy. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to bring on my first guest, Dr. DeLuca. Welcome, Dr. DeLuca.
Good evening, Richard. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure, sir. It's so great to have a medical professional, and I'm told by my co-producer that you are a real standout, sir. A person who genuinely does care for his patients. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little about yourself.
Well, my story is kind of takes a sort of a winding path. I started out actually in pre-med, and I realized that really wasn't for me at the time, so I switched my major into nutrition. And I graduated from college with a bachelor's degree in nutrition, and then I was about to teach science, and I developed some low back pain, and I happened to meet a chiropractor who was a strength and conditioning coach at the high school where I was teaching, also a strength and conditioning coach, and he fixed my low back in a couple of adjustments, and 6 months later I was down in chiropractic school. So I practiced chiropractic in New Jersey for about 10 years. Along the way, I picked up a master's degree in nutrition because I always had an interest in nutrition and sports and conditioning and exercise and those various topics. And then I kind of got the idea that I needed to put more tools in my tool bag, and off I went into medical school. So once I graduated from medical school, I did a three-year residency in internal medicine. So I'm board certified in internal medicine. Subsequently moved to Florida and set up my practice down here.
Well, it seems to me, now you'll excuse my cynicism, sir, that it seems to me that you could be making a lot more money if you weren't worried about all these kind of health care concerns. There's an awful lot of doctors that ignore nutrition. There's an awful lot of doctors that, process their patients almost on the assembly line. And so it seems to me that you're a person with real genuine concerns about nutrition. Obviously, that's what made you pay attention to these the genetically modified foods. Is that correct?
That is correct. When it comes to healthcare and health in general, prevention is paramount. So we really have to concentrate on what we're actually putting into our bodies, putting on our bodies, the thoughts we think, how we exercise. All these basically determine our health status. And it's up to us to take care of ourselves.
So were you how did you come across this information? Obviously, part of it must have been when you were studying nutrition, but some of us were made aware of some of these issues when we read Rachel Carson or related stuff. What was it that first alerted you to some of these dangerous foods and some of these substances that are included in so many of the foods that people eat?
Well, my first exposure to this kind of technology was actually when I was in college, and there was a company at that time that started called Genentech, and they were the first ones to use recombinant DNA technology, and they were able to introduce the gene into a strain of E. coli, and that allowed them to produce human insulin. And that was fantastic use of this technology that saved a lot of people's lives. And the technology was also used to produce growth hormone, which at the time was being made from cadavers, and some other blood products which helped with hemophilia and some other diseases. So this was really, at the start, this was really a good thing for medicine. Somewhere along the way, it was decided that they could expand the technology and put it into other things such as crops and plants and different species. And that's where it kind of breaks down, because we don't know exactly. There are no long-term studies of what will happen when we consume these type of things. It's similar to smoking. If you smoke a cigarette and you don't die right away, they'll say, well, people might say, oh, there's nothing wrong with that cigarette, and that basically Big Tobacco had used that that kind of stall tactic for many years, coming up with various different, we'll say, questionable experiments and things like that to kind of delay the eventual acceptance that, yes, smoking was indeed bad for you. When you get to the food source, now this is food is something we consume, everybody consumes every day. So we have to know what goes into our mouths and goes into our body, because we are indeed what we eat. And not only are what we eat, we are what the plant or the animal that we ate. So it goes back even further. So we have to be very cautious about what we put in. And there are no long-term studies of really what happens when we consume these genetically modified foods. Now, about 16 years ago, these started to hit the shelves. And as far as human existence goes, that's a very short period of time. And we don't have the opportunity to do long-term studies, now to see what the actual outcome will be. So we're kind of playing genetic roulette here to see what the eventual outcome is going to be. And so that's why I always recommend to my patients, avoid these foods if you can. Eat as organic as you can, because what you do and what you put into your mouth does have an effect on your health.
You know, when you hear the argument for, let's say, inserting pesticide in genes that go into, let's say, potatoes or corn, you know, you can see from one perspective, my goodness, what a great delivery system. But it seems to me, without some very serious, very careful analysis and studies, where there's no financial payback for them to do that, you're playing dice. You're shooting. You're hoping for the best, and not doing anything scientific to determine what actually the impact is. Are you aware of some research that's being done on these matters, whether it be, the impact of genetically modified substances on, let's say, cattle or chicken or swine or plants? Is there any serious work being done, or are we all just sort of hoping for the best and shooting, whistling in the dark?
There's a lot of research being done, and unfortunately, it's all being done, as far as I can tell, outside the United States. I'll just list two examples. In Norway, there's a study, I think it was published last month, and they looked at the transfer of genes. Actually, they were looking at an antibiotic, the gene for antibiotic, and what is claimed is that they go through the body unattached, or they just pass through, and there's no significant long-term negative sequelae to it or bad effects. But the people from Norway said our findings show that the genes can be transferred through the intestinal wall into the blood, and the genes from the GMO food have been found in blood, muscle tissue, and liver sufficiently in large enough segments to be identified. So it actually does break through the barrier, and it does get absorbed into the body. There's another study from Brazil, published in, I think, 2009, and they looked at the effects of feeding soy on rats. So they fed female rats genetically modified soy for 15 months, and it showed significant changes in their uterus and reproductive cycles compared to the rats fed organic soy or no soy at all. So the easiest way to do research is to do it in small animals with shorter lifespans, such as rats. And there's, you know, very good reasons to believe that if something happens into the rat, it will certainly happen into the human. And there are plenty of studies being done. There's studies being done in Russia. There's studies being done all over the world. That's why in most places, or a lot of places, the genetically modified organisms are either banned or forced to be labeled.
Now, you know, there's quite a bit of alarm where you know, farmers are being forced to use genetic seeds, where they're given seeds that, shall we say, are biologically set to time out so they can't be planted. We hear about farmers in Eastern Europe who are literally being forced to use genetically modified seeds. Do you see any kind of significant blowback or any kind of societal response to this sort of very cavalier use of science?
I think that's more cavalier use of political pressure than science.
Okay.
But time is going to tell. And we all, you know, there are very, very stories about people from other countries, India perhaps, where the use of the seeds isn't turning out to be the economic boom that they thought it was going to be, and there are, you know, mass suicides, and there are contamination of different fields. So this is just the beginning of the story, I believe. And I think it's, you know, because this is going to take in a lot of different areas. It's going to take in economics, agriculture, politics, health. It's good. This is really where everything comes together, I believe.
Well, many of us have heard the stories of scientists, whistleblowers who've come out of the FDA saying there's a lot of times when very flawed research or industries that are basically required to do self-policing and let's just say they're not doing a great job. When you counsel your patients about, let's say, eating organic versus eating, you know, the average grocery store, what kind of suggestions do you make? What concerns do you raise about what we might call the hopefully the organic market as opposed to the more commercial market? Do you make recommendations along those lines?
I do. I always tell. I try to instill in my patients the need to eat as natural as they can and as organically as they can. Jacqueline had a great quote, probably 40 years old at least, and said, "If man made it, don't eat it," because the way things are now, the more processed foods are, the more chance there is for genetic modified organisms to be put in there and all other kinds of. We'll call them contaminants for lack of a better word. But I always counsel the patients to try to eat a natural diet, you know, heavy in fruits and vegetables, lean meats if they choose to eat so. But the Environmental Working Group has a nice, they have a list of the top foods that you should always buy organic, and there are some other foods that you can get away with without buying organic. Sometimes it comes down to a question of cost, because organic seems to cost more, at least in the short run, but when you compare that to the cost way down the line of increased healthcare costs, I think, you know, it's either pay me now or pay me later sort of thing.
Sure. We've had some GMO folks on in the past who've urged us, should we say, the quick rule of thumb was when you go to the grocery store, buy around the peripheral, don't buy in the center of the store where all that prepared food is, where all the, you know, should we say, highly manufactured edibles are. That sounded pretty interesting advice. Can you direct our audience to any particular good sources of information on organic or the issues raised by genetically modified foods? Any books you could recommend?
Well, actually, probably books are out of date by the time they're printed now.
Okay, internet websites. What am I thinking?
Yes, it's all about the internet now. EW Environmental Working Group, which is EWG.org, they usually have very good resources. So that would be like the first place that I would recommend that people go.
Okay, let me ask you this: when you know, it's so striking to me that once upon a time during the post-French Revolution, the phrase "you are what you eat" was seen to be extraordinarily vulgar, because we were all made of divine stuff, and that seemed to belittle the human condition. And yet now we find ourselves, at least those of us who have a passing acquaintance with science, to be very aware that the stuff our bodies make and manufacture comes from the foods that we eat. You also mentioned the mental health and the mental conditions. Do you want to talk for just a little bit about that?
Sure. We artificially divide the body into the mind and the body, which is really we just do that for study purposes. They are one and the same. And what affects the body can affect the mind, will affect the mind, and what affects the mind will affect the body. So it's very much a closed system. So if you put bad fuel into your body, you're going to put bad fuel into your brain. So and it's even not even what you eat. It's also, it could be what your body's made up of. And let me give you an example. There's what is known as the microbiome. And I don't know if your listeners are aware of this or not, but we have trillions of bacteria in and on our body, and most of them is there to protect us, and they're beneficial. We actually are, by weight, we have more bacterial DNA than we have human DNA in our bodies.
Hmm.
And this goes back to even when we talk about GMO things, because when you put things like pesticide genes into a food, that can and will disrupt the human biome or the gut flora, and that has been shown to even affect our mental state. So people with depression have a different microbiome or a different composition of their gut flora than people who don't. Now, it's easy to think of that, well, okay, if the GI system is affected, well, I can see something like colitis or indigestion or leaky gut or some other things, you know, we have a direct relationship, but things that get through also go through the gut wall or through the GI system also go up to the brain. So just eating GMO foods can alter our gut flora, and that can give us psychological or mental changes. So nothing, we can't separate out anything. Everything is related. It's not linear. It's a web.
Well, thank you so much, sir. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us. If you were going to leave us with some message or some thought, what would that be, sir?
Well, I would say I believe that people have the right and also the obligation to take care of themselves, to take personal responsibility for their health. And they can't do that adequately without information. So in other words, to make an informed decision, it's impossible to do with if you're not informed. This is why genetically modified labeling is so important. So you need the freedom of choice to choose what you want to eat, but you need to be aware of what you're choosing.
Well, thank you
so
much.
I think I said it before, but as prevention is paramount when it comes to health.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us, sir. We really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you for being more than just a physician. You're a true healer, sir. Thank you again.
Thank you, Richard. Have a nice night.
Hope to have you back again sometime. Thanks. Good night. So that was Dr. DeLuca, who shared his thoughts with us on eating organic and GM foods. And he said definitely being aware of what you're eating is very important. That's why the fight for genetic food labeling is so important. I think we've got our next guest. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome Trish Sheldon. Trish, welcome.
Hi, welcome everyone. How are you,
my dear?
Doing well, thank you.
That's good. I hope you're high and dry.
Pretty much. Yeah, we're doing okay here. Yes.
That's good.
So, how about you?
Oh, we're doing real good. We've had a nice steady rain, and goodness knows the plants and the animals are very thrilled. I've got frogs just outside the studio that couldn't be happier.
Ah, good. Definitely.
So, there's so many things going on in the world of GM foods. What's new, Trish?
I know. It's really been exploding with this California Prop 37 and Right to Know. It's absolutely, we're getting inundated. And the media is starting to finally talk about the issues because of the proposition. And so it's looking positive. I mean, we still have a long way to go, but it's more and more people are finding out. And as soon as you get the media to start talking, then people really start to research for themselves. And that's what we're seeing happening, an explosion of research. and an outpouring of money from a lot of the organic, outfits, and as well, you have the opposition funding, millions.
Goes without saying.
Right?
Right, right.
Sure. So we're seeing our first commercials in California supporting Prop 37. So just today they're coming out. So expect to see counter commercials, I'm sure.
Let me ask you this. Are you familiar enough with Prop 37 to talk about some of the details? What's covered, what's not covered?
Well, I'm really not so much because that's really the California initiative, and it's very
sure.
different from here in Florida where we need to do an amendment. So, you know, we're one of the only states that really has to do things very differently than the rest. So, but with California, what I do know is that it definitely covers really the food and maybe a small it's mostly is really just about the food. And we're hoping that if we can get the edge in the door with that, then maybe we can start working on these test crops and certain things that are going on under our noses that we don't really even know about, you know. But that would be eventually. So, I don't know a lot of the details. But
I'll tell you what, I just called it up, and let me get you, I'll read you a short little segment, and then you can react to it, okay? Prop 37, known as the California Right to Know Genetically Engineered Food Act, if passed, will make California the first state in the nation to require that food manufacturers appropriately label all food, raw and processed. Wow, what a breakthrough that would be, huh? To contain ingredients made from genetically modified organisms, GMOs. The term refers to a scientific procedure that have altered the genetic material in various organisms. If the measure succeeds, similar labeling laws have failed in 19 states. My goodness. It could mean nationwide changes as other states are watching, especially in terms of things such as language clarification. The results in California are important. Well, I'll leave that at that. But, wow, that would be super.
Well, that's just it. We're reading more labels, and the point is if we see that it's genetically modified, 9 out of 10 people state they would not ingest a GMO if they knew, and that's just what it is. We don't know, and we do have that right, and that is the campaign is the right to know. And that's similarly, we're using that campaign here in Florida. We've secured, I'm with GMO Free Florida and Millions Against Monsanto Florida chapter, and our team has is working now with teams in Tampa. We've now secured Right to Know Hollywood, Right to Know Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Right to Know Tampa Bay, Gainesville, Jacksonville, Orlando, Ocala, Venice, and Northlake. So if anyone's in these areas and listening, please, look us up on Facebook and join the efforts. This is for the 2014 ballot, an amendment to the ballot. And working with us, loosely is the IRT and the Organic, that's the Institute for Responsible Technology, and the Organic Consumer Association. And just today, interestingly, Food and Water Watch has joined our efforts and has organizers in our area. So it's and we're getting, we're getting every day, we're getting a new team to pop up across the state, and that's what we need. We need to secure people in every city in the state. So it's going to be interesting, but we're doing it. Yeah.
Well, the first battle is always information, so that's great. It sounds like you're really getting some traction on the ground. It seems to me that more and more people, once upon a time, it was organic was the buzzword, and that people began to think about organic food. And now there's more and more people you hear are aware of the genetically modified food, genetically modified organisms. And I think I can't think how important that is, You're feeding children every day. I used to feed children every day.
Right.
We feed those we love every day. It's not an issue that's far away. It's not like a country somewhere off in the distance that we don't know and we're just bombing because somebody told us it was a hell of a good idea. This is the food that we place literally in our loved ones every day. I can't imagine anything more than that. Now, I understand that there's some events coming up that you want to tell us about.
Yes. I do, which is great. The very first thing we have is we've joined efforts with Organic Consumer Association, and which we always do, and with Occupy Monsanto. And on September 21st at 5 p.m., we will be holding a rally in front of BM Organics, which is on Federal in Fort Lauderdale. And stay tuned. And at the end, I'll give my email address, and everyone, you know, if you want to get in touch with me, I'll give more details. But we'll be rallying in front of BM Organics. We'll be showing a screening, having organic heirloom popcorn, and really also recruiting for our future initiatives. And just really, hopefully we'll get some media attention there, because we really want to get this message out that we don't want these foods. And, you know, it is a completely different food supply now than it was in the early 90s. You know, see, back when organic started, not when it started, but the issue used to be just strictly, you know, pesticides and the effects that had on ourselves and the planet. And now we're dealing with organisms from other species that's changing DNA. So, you know, so it is very important, you know, and so we do need your help. We do need everyone that we can possibly get on board for this initiative in every city. So we'll have that rally there. That's on September 21st, 5 p.m., and 7 p.m. is the film. And then we'll be doing a big rally again, our yearly rally, which will be near World Food Day, which I think it's Tuesday this year. So we'll probably do it Sunday, like the 14th of October. So we'll have probably music and some doctors and speakers, and maybe your doctor that you had on earlier, maybe he wants to come and speak at our event as well. So maybe he'll connect us.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I had an interesting conversation with a butcher in one of the chain stores just this last week. And I asked him, I said, you know, what did he know about the you know, labeled organic meat there and the labeled green meat there as opposed to the standard meat that they offer? And he said, oh, no, you know, we don't sell anything with any chemicals in it at all. And I said, well, you know,
right.
I said, you know, it's really well documented between the growth hormones, you know, and it's just downhill from there. You know, some of the substances that are being fed to cows, I said, and including other parts of cows being fed to cows. And
right,
he said,
right,
oh,
exactly.
No, we do nothing like that. And I thought, you know, I really felt that this guy just didn't know. You know, he seemed to be genuinely, you know, a caring person. He seemed, you know, it wasn't like he was being dishonest. It seemed like he just didn't know any better.
No, you opened his mind. He's thinking about it now, for sure. Because we're so removed from our food supply. We're so far removed from it these days. And even the butchers are removed. You know, they get their shipment in, and they don't expect that all of those hormones and stuff is pumped into them, you know, and especially thinking, where does the corn come from that feeds the cow, you know? We're looking at things like the possibility of horizontal gene transfer. So we're eating these cows that are eating this genetically modified corn, and the potential here is that we are, you know, could possibly, the DNA could be jumping from species. You know, we're talking crossing the species barrier, the possibilities of. So you just don't know. He really doesn't know. Like, who would even think that would be an issue, really? I mean, it's crazy because our FDA labels it as substantially equivalent when it's not. If it's made in the lab and it has a special patent, it's not substantially equivalent, this corn that these cows are ingesting, but they're not even supposed to be ingesting, you know? So, right, he probably has no idea. Seriously, he thinks he's bringing the freshest, greatest piece of meat to you. And honestly, it's just not what he thinks, you know.
Yeah, I was wondering, is there a source that one can go to? I mean, you know, in the grocery stores now, they're alert enough to it that they're selling, whether it be buffalo meat or, quote, organic, unquote. And I just wonder, is there a source that says that, you know, this, quote, organic supplier is is more organic than another? Because I know, and many of us know, that these terms are used rather, oh, let's say casually.
Right, right. Yeah, it is. It's true. And, you know, sometimes you have grass-fed cows, but they're grain-finished. You know, you have to ask, is it grain-finished or is it completely grass-fed from birth to finish? You know, I don't eat meat, so personally,
not an
you
issue
know,
for you.
Me, but... Not an issue, but I do have a lot of, you know, my clients and friends who are asking those questions. And so that's why it is so important in general to support USDA, organic, grass-fed, if you're going to do it, you know, and say, you know, is this grain finished or not? You know, I just want it grass-fed all the way through. And so I know Whole Foods has, like, white oak pastures, I guess, and you know, just look for the, just support the label, the USDA organic label. And you know, not only will that help to bring the prices down, but you can bet that it's, you know, it will not have GMO grains. Or, you know, sometimes, for example, I do a lot of my shopping at BM Organics, and I put a lot of faith and trust in Charles over there. He's on federal, and well, that's where we're having the rally coming up. He also is really gives me a meeting space whenever I need it. Is really, really like family, and you know, he goes to these farms. He knows the farmers. He knows where the food's coming from. So there may not be a USDA organic label on there, but these are grass-fed cows, never touched grain, and I know this just based on, you know, his experience with the farmers. So.
Trish,
you know,
let me ask you one more question, if I may.
Sure.
You know, you focus a lot of your time in this issue, and we really respect you as a very informed consumer and opinion leader in this area. If you were to warn people, because not everyone can shop as organic as they might like. Obviously,
no.
Cost is always an issue. But if you were to name two or three foodstuffs that should absolutely be avoided at all costs because they are the most egregious impacted by these GMO issues. Is there a manufacturer or a foodstuff that you want to recommend that our listeners avoid at all costs? What would you say those are?
Yeah, I would have to say that it's kind of common sense. If you really think about it, we're eating these processed, packaged snack foods. You know, and anything that's a processed packaged snack is going to have GMO corn, GMO soy, GMO lecithin, GMO canola oil, okay? Any one of our top five companies, Kraft, Kellogg's, all of our children's cereals, they live on, okay? So the longer the shelf life on these products, the less health value and the more GMOs will be in it. So it's kind of a twofold. Anything that's in the package, it's fake and it's processed, number one. It's there for long shelf life. There's no nutrient value, number two. But number three, on top of it, you have the added thing that, you know, the subsidy crops, the GMOs, are inundated in those kinds of foods. So really avoid the big snack pack foods and the corn chips and the Doritos and the Lay's. You can get like five and six GMO different types of GMOs in one bag. Some even have the cottonseed oil in it, you know, on top of it. So, you know, start thinking if you're going to have those kinds of chips, try the brown rice chips from Lundberg Farms. Excellent. They're crunchy, really good chips, and they're made from organic brown rice, or they have the non-GMO project label. So if for people on the budget, look for the non-GMO project label. Avoid corn and soy, canola oil, and, you know, sugar if you can, you know, like Pepsi and Coca-Cola. That's got the GMO sugar beet in it, you know. So, and all these companies are fighting this labeling. They don't want you to know. They do not want to change their packaging. So the money is coming in from these companies. It's crazy. So we can, you know, we can buy with our wallets. No one really, you know, listens to our voice, you know, so much in this country. So, or our signature too much. So buying power, you know, I think we can take it back with our dollars and don't give these companies our money that are destroying us. We have the worst health of any country. 50 countries ban or label GMOs, and we wonder why we're so sick in this country. Okay, we're inundated. And then we're beholden to Big Pharma the rest of our life. So eat more fresh foods, you know, avoid these processed packaged foods that are killing us anyway, let alone, you know, GMOs on top of it, you know. So, and then I wanted to get to the mosquito issue.
Please do.
I know, just very quickly, because I know you probably have to run, but, you know, oxygen has been working in the Florida Keys to try to release these genetically modified mosquitoes. And, you know, they're working with the Florida Mosquito Control to release these. And so they're trying to get approval now. They're doing it from many different angles. So far, we have a hold on it because enough people came to the meetings and talked and spoke out about it. But, you know, there hasn't been any new cases of dengue in 2 years. There's no evidence that the Aedes aegypti, the type of mosquito that Oxitec has genetically modified, that it will that it has any ability to reduce dengue. And then on top of it, there's no peer-reviewed studies to determine whether the synthetic protein that they use E. coli, and they use herpes simplex virus to actually activate these mosquitoes, okay?
Gee,
so imagine,
Christmas.
Right, a bloodsucker and a saliva, you have a host situation, and these mosquitoes are activated with E. coli and herpes. Just doesn't seem really smart, you know, so pay attention. Yeah, right?
Incredible.
So there's no peer-reviewed studies
for
human impact. And so we don't know what these impacts are in humans as well. And if you look at just our genetically modified foods and the evolution that these proteins are taking, creating their own new DNA, I can only imagine when you have blood and saliva and a host situation, I can't even think about it. So, and then you have a complex disease such as dengue, okay, on top of it. You know, so we don't know the impacts on humans or the animals that ingest these or what it could do, you know, to our in general. Just
well, Trish, let me ask you one final quick question.
Sure. Yep.
I couldn't let you go without saying, is your band playing somewhere soon next week or two?
Well, we just did a benefit for BM Organics. And that's our last one for a little while. Thank you.
Okay.
We're recording. We have a new single coming out shortly, and we're working on the new EP. So,
so look for Blue Sky Drive for quality music.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Trish.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Let me give my email address really quick if anyone has questions or would like to join our efforts. GMOfreeflorida@yahoo.com, and you can find us on Facebook, GMO Free Florida and MAM Florida Chapter. And please look for Right to Know, Right to Know Hollywood, Fort Lauderdale on Facebook and join us. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Trish. Bye-bye.
Okay. Great to hear from you. Thanks. Bye.
Our pleasure. Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome Matt Keating. Welcome, Matt.
Hi. Thank you for having me on tonight.
Oh, my goodness. Darn. Accidentally cut him off. Matt, call me right back. Sorry about that, buddy. Well, listen, while Matt's dialing back in, I do want to raise another issue with you. Let's see here. One of the other news stories that I thought you should hear about is, you know, Citizens United, that insurance company that's meant to help out Floridians. It seems that their executives have been traveling and staying on the public dole at all the finest restaurants and all the finest eateries and staying in five-star hotels. Isn't that nice? Good to know that they've had such a tight budget. Let's try this again. Matt, sorry about that, Chief. How you doing?
Hey, can we blame the storm for that one?
Oh, as much as I'd like to, I have to take credit for it. Matt, what's new, guy?
Working to do everything we can with our volunteer team to take down Allen West in the newly drawn 18th Congressional District. That's Palm Beach County, Martin County, and St. Lucie County on the Treasure Coast of Florida.
Well, I'll tell you what, this radio show and all the activists who tune in, we are with you 100%, man. What a great target. this guy is more rabid than McCarthy, less well informed than Sarah Palin. I don't know. I mean, how do you tell us about your plan to help people learn just how bad this carpetbagger is?
Well, we're putting together a really strong, robust house party program to introduce folks to you know, like-minded neighbors, family, and friends. It's our Kiss Alan West Goodbye House Party Program. You know, we're talking about one of the most dangerously out-of-step members of Congress, someone who's voted with the likes of Paul Ryan and Todd Akin to redefine rape, someone who accused his colleagues in the House of Representatives, he accused 80 members of Congress for being communists, and you know what he says about those of us who drive with Obama bumper stickers, we're a threat to the gene pool. So, you know, this Alan West couldn't be more out of touch and more wrong when it comes time to reflect the values of Florida's Treasure Coast. And we're doing everything we can to make phone calls, knock on doors, and host these Kiss Alan West Goodbye House Parties to get folks involved.
Well, I attended one of Alan West's dues where he wanted to come out and take a bow at a senior center that he would have gutted if he had control over funds for it. It's amazing the hypocrisy of this fellow. And then when somebody asked him, how did he have the temerity to accuse these members of Congress of being communists, his response was, well, that's because they're progressives. Not that there's anything wrong with that, essentially, he said. And we put this up as a video. And yet, you know, here he is, you know, pretending to be in favor of a senior center when you know that they're against any kind of federal or governmental funding for these things. It the nerve, the hypocrisy is absolutely amazing.
He'll do anything and he'll say anything, but here's the good news. For every crazy, out-of-step, Tea Party thing that Alan West says, five more volunteers are ready and willing to do some good work with our Take Down West team to get him out of office and kiss him goodbye.
Well, you know, one of the things, there's a lot of people that will tell you how conservative and how backward the Treasure Coast is politically, what a hotbed of Republicanism it is, and it is to an extent. But I'll tell you what, I've never been less surprised when I see good progressive Democrats come out. Now, there was a couple out there, good progressive Democrats. They're in their 70s, and they were out there to ask questions of this guy. They weren't going to let him snake by.
Well, he's not a friend to seniors, regardless of political ideology. You know, he wants to privatize Social Security, and his cuts to Medicare are dangerous, regardless of how he spins it. He is not a friend to seniors. He's not a friend to women. He's not a friend to you, to me, to anyone listening to this program. We need to send Alan West packing in November and make him a one-term congressman and restore some common sense to Congress.
Well, I know we think it's amazing, and it couldn't be more supportive of the good people of Credo who've worked to bring this resource to the coast. And, you know, we can't thank you enough. So, my goodness,
well,
keep up the good work. Are there any events coming up?
There are. You know, I want to say thank you to you and to everyone who's doing the good work to get West out of office. We've got a house party tomorrow night. In Indiantown, a Kiss Alan West Goodbye House Party. You can find out more at takedownwest.com. That's www.takedownwest.com. And we've got a whole series of these house parties coming up in September all throughout the district. If you want to host one, or if you'd like to be involved in the host planning committee, or just attend one with your family and friends, takedownwest.com. And I'm sure everyone listening to this program would agree, we've got to send Alan West packing in November.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, the one thing I find it completely amazing, here you've got a Republican Party that's gone out of its way to annoy and diss women, Hispanics, African Americans. Who's their constituency? I'm not quite sure.
I think Alan West's constituency consists of the Koch brothers. If you're not the Koch brothers, he ain't your friend. Trust me. Alan West, there couldn't be a more crazy, out-of-touch, out-of-step member of Congress and really pleased that the volunteer teams here at our Credo office have really stepped up in a big way to do everything we can to take West down. You know, Credo is not your average super PAC that puts up millions of dollars in advertising. We're doing this grassroots, old-fashioned, rolling up your sleeves, knocking on doors, making phone calls. It's a volunteer-fueled campaign, and I'm really proud to be a part of it. And so hats off, hat tip to the entire Take Down West team.
Please give my personal regards to Lee Anderson, would you? Yeah, great guy.
Oh, yeah, Lee's great. He's doing some great work, and the whole team, you know, from folks who bring us meals to folks who write letters to the editor, to folks who are doing the good work, hosting house parties and making phone calls to get folks fired up for this election, which is, what, 72 days away at this point? Doing everything we can, takedownwest.com, and again, hat tip and thank you for everything you're doing on the air. I appreciate it.
You bet. Matt, let me ask you one last question, if I may. You know, nowadays it's hard enough to make a living. It's hard enough to maintain relationships. And it takes a special kind of person to undertake one more thing. That's to make this world better. Can I ask you to talk about yourself just for a minute? What was it that got you involved? What was it that made you step up and say, I'm going to make this a better world?
When someone like Alan West is roaming the halls of Congress, who is supposed to be representing the people, and he clearly has the interests of two Koch brothers in mind, it's our duty as Americans to do some good work. It gets me fired up to get out of bed early and come in and make the phone calls that are needed and knock on the doors that are needed, and I'm not alone, clearly. We have hundreds upon hundreds of volunteers who are fired up to do exactly the same thing because they see someone like West who's so dangerous, so crazy, so out of touch it's high time we restore some sanity and some civility. And that's what motivates us, and that's what motivates, I'm sure you and many of your listeners, if not all, to really take these folks down and let them know that this, you know, the Tea Party is over. Tea Party is over come November.
Well, let me ask you this. Is Gail nearby?
Yeah, I know Gail really well. She's great.
Okay. Well, Matt, thank you so much for calling, and we want to definitely have you back again as things get closer to the election. Anytime you'd like to make an announcement or invite people out, you let us know. We'll make sure you get some air, okay?
Tell Gail that my hat's off to her because she and the team with Stand Up Florida braved that storm and really went to the eye they went to the heart of that storm today, and hats off to them for braving the weather to really take a stand against the Tea Party in Tampa. So it's a great crew, and it's one of our many coalition members, and I'm happy to be working so closely with them. And you know, guaranteed we're going to be in Tampa over the next few days too. When Alan West is hosting a $1,000 fundraiser, we'll be making thousands of phone calls to take him down.
Thanks again, Matt. You take care. Best of luck.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks
much. Okay, bye-bye. Okay, that was Matt Keating of Credo and their Take Down West campaign. That was fantastic. We're hoping to hear from Gail Faith in just a few minutes, and she's going to give us our report from Tampa. And meanwhile, speaking of Tampa, this news item, the GOP has just approved the most conservative platform in modern history. Yep. A week from the 2012 Republican National Convention, Republican committee members spent Tuesday articulating and affirming the principles they stand for in a draft of the official party platform, led by Governor Bob Vaginal Probe McDonald of Virginia, and featuring other Tea Party stars like Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kobach and Representative Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee. The committee approved the draft of the platform that Donald said will reflect the heart and soul of the Republican Party. And one committee member called it the most conservative platform in all of history. Some of the high points, ladies and gentlemen. no abortion in cases of rape or incest. That's a legitimate rape and legitimate incest or not. Salute to mandatory ultrasounds. Now, curious enough, that's just for girls, not for boys, for some reason. No legal recognition of same-sex couples. Replicate the Arizona-style immigration laws. They'd like to audit the Fed. I think maybe they think that UFOs have spirited away all that gold. Of course, they're not asking for an investigation of Wall Street, God knows. No women in combat. Combat's just for boys. No statehood and more guns for Washington, D.C. Yes, sirree, and no new taxes except for war. Isn't that just heartwarming, ladies and gentlemen? I'll tell you what. It is truly, truly heartwarming. On the Julian Assange front, the British government's threat to invade the Ecuadorian embassy in London and seize Julian Assange is of historic significance. David Cameron, former PR man to a television industry huckster and arms salesman, to sheikdoms, is well-placed to dishonor international conventions that have protected Britons in places of upheaval, just as Tony Blair's invasion of Iraq led directly to acts of terrorism in London on 7 July 2005. So Cameron and Foreign Secretary William Hague have compromised the safety of British representatives across the globe. Threatening to abuse a law designed to expel murderers from foreign embassies while defaming an innocent man as an alleged criminal, Hague has made a laughingstock of Britain across the world, though this view is mostly suppressed in Britain. The same brave newspapers and broadcasters that have supported Britain's part in the epic bloody crime, from genocide in Indonesia to the invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan, they now attack the human rights record of Ecuador, whose real crime is to stand up to the bullies in London and Washington. As if the Olympics happy clappery had been subverted overnight by a revealing display of colonial thuggery, witness the British arms officer come reporter Mark Urban interviewing a braying Sir Christopher Meyer, Blair's former apologist in Washington, outside the Ecuadorian embassy. The pair of them erupting with blimpish indignation that the unclubbable Assange and the uncowed Rafael Correa of Ecuador should expose the Western system of rapacious power. Similarly, a front is vivid in the pages of The Guardian of the UK, which has counseled Hague to be patient and that storming the embassy would be more trouble than it's worth. Assange was not a political refugee, The Guardian UK declared, because neither Sweden nor the UK would in any case deport someone who might face torture or the death penalty. Irresponsible of this statement matches The Guardian UK's perfidious role in the whole Assange affair. The paper knows full well that documents released by WikiLeaks indicate that Sweden has consistently submitted to pressure from the US in matters of civil rights. In December 2001, the Swedish government abruptly revoked the political refugee status of two Egyptians, Ahmed Agassi and Mohamed El-Zahri, who were handed to CIA kidnap squad at Stockholm Airport and rendered, so to speak, to Egypt. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to bring you our next guest, the charming and talented Miss Gail Faith. Gail, welcome.
Hi.
How you doing?
Oh, we're doing great. We had such an amazing day. I'm going to give you a little recap, and then I've got three different people for you to talk to.
Fantastic.
And if you'll just kind of tell them when you want them to pass the phone to the next person.
Will do. So you're in Tampa now?
We're on our way back.
Great. Made it home. On your way back safe and sound? No one clubbed into submission, thank goodness, I hope?
No, but I will tell you, one of the first impressions was how much security was there. Police on horseback, police. When we got off the bus with our signs and we had made a giant silver spoon, they checked every one of our signs. three or four times they examined the silver spoon. We had made it totally out of cardboard so that it was up to code. And it was just amazing the amount of security that was there. And they were all pretty reasonable. But
well, that's good.
The other thing was there was report, I think because a lot of people didn't come as they anticipated because of the weather, there were reporters from all over the world. I mean, a lot locals, but even, you know, from France and places like that.
Excellent. Well, you guys are there. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, you guys are there representing a lot of us who wanted to be there but couldn't. And we really appreciate you going out there. So you also mentioned that you made your mark on Bank of America.
Yes, we had about 400 people, and they met in a park, and like a band played. They had some workers from Sensata, which is a Bain company that's being shipped over to China, the jobs. So they had people speak there. So then they took the group of 400 and broke us down into like groups of maybe 75, and we had balloons with 99% and like sidewalk chalk and stickers that said we are the 99%, and we went over to Bank of America, and I can't wait for those executives come in tomorrow because there is chalk all over their sidewalks and all over their pillars about and the police were there, and we obeyed all the rules.
Good, good.
Then we came back to the park, and the 400 people marched through town. Our silver spoon got a lot of attention. We also had two banners. One of them, I'm going to have you talk to the artist. He drew an elephant that has a big pile of dung crushing the 99%. And that was, the sign said the Republican agenda. And then we had another one that said the Romney economy, no billionaire left behind.
Well, let me get one of those other activists on. Thanks,
okay. There you go. Here's Tom. He's the artist who made the elephant.
Hey, Tom, welcome.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, good. This is Rick, news director of Progressive News Network. So tell us, you created some artwork for your protest today.
I did. It was a 15-foot banner, maybe.
Wow, that's great. We'll be looking for it in the TV coverage.
Yeah, I will be too.
So, so you were pointing out the what the Republican plan is for the 99ers, huh?
Yeah, well, I think that we're all out there just to get out the word, let people know that the Romney economy doesn't work. You know, I was out there because I'm an independent voter, and I believe in a small, effectively run government that's in the service of the people. And as a voter, I really have nowhere to turn to. So I was out there to give a message to the Republicans that, you know, need to wake up and demand change in their party, or else they're going to be crushed under a giant pile of elephant dung with the rest of us.
Oh, that's great. Thanks a lot. What was your one, if you can give us one impression of Tampa and the RNC facility there, what was your first impression?
First impression was definitely the security. I mean, you can't miss it. But, you know, they were nice. You know, they weren't headbusters. But it was really intense. Before you could figure out if they were headbusters or not, all you saw when you pulled in the streets were just lines and lines and lines of cops, dressed in, you know, some in riot gear, some not. But yeah, it was really intense.
Well, I'm glad no one had any problems, and it sounds like they were prepared to respect your right to protest. That's great. You want to pass me to another rally attendee?
Sure will.
Thanks, Tom. You too.
Hello, my name is Norma Jean.
Hi, Norma Jean. Welcome to Progressive News Network. What was your impression of Tampa?
I was impressed by the people. There was such a vast variety of people, senior citizens like myself, young people, young professionals, students. It represented the 99%ers. And to think that these people would take time out of their personal lives, and they came from all over the country, and commit to one another, it renewed my faith in humanity.
That's always so good. You know, you make a point that I make myself so often. I usually ask my guests, what was it that made you stand up? You know, it's so difficult now to make a living, to raise a family, to help your family, and yet people, time after time, rise up beyond that and contribute and try to make a difference. What was it that made you stand up, and what made you go to Tampa today, Norma?
I feel so bad for the young people. I mean, Dad and I are able to retire because he was a union worker, and we have his retirement, and we also have Social Security. That's what we live on. And, you know, I worry that my children and my grandchildren, I have a couple of great-grandchildren, and what's going to be left for them? And so I have to support the young people because they need us.
Well, that's really generous of you, and I want to thank you for helping. Your presence.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you being on the air. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Norma Jean. Bye-bye. Is there one more person?
Richard.
Hi.
Good afternoon, Richard. This is Polly. How are you?
Very good, Polly. So tell us, Polly, what brought you to Tampa today?
Well, it was a great opportunity to protest against the Republican National Convention to just keep the continuity of our message that we do need economic reform and we need economic justice, that we are not invisible. And, you know, we're here and we have needs that need to be addressed.
Yep, I think the Constitution says in order to make a more perfect union, and that's what we all contribute to. You know, I think it's so great that people stand up and try to contribute to make this a better world. What was it that made you go?
I want to see change happen, and I believe that if I don't show up, that someone will make decisions about my life for me. And I want to be the one to make those decisions about my life. And so this is really an act of self-defense for me, to be able to have voice for my own will.
Well, I want to thank you on behalf of the show and on behalf of everybody who wanted to be with you, people that were with you in their hearts and with their souls. Thank you for going to Tampa today for us.
Thank you so much for having us on your show. Thank you.
Okay. You take care.
You as well. Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Eric.
Hi. Who's this?
Gail.
Hey, Gail. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to call us. If you were to leave our audience with one thought from your experience in Tampa today, what would that be?
We all have to work together if we want to make a change.
Well, Gail, I want to thank you. I want to thank Stand Up. It's so great that you put this trip together and so great that you brought these people out to Tampa. Thank you from the bottom of my heart, and thank you for my country that you were there to stand up for Florida. Thank you.
Thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to message out. Have a wonderful evening.
You too, dear. You too. Thanks again. We hope to talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay.
That was Gail Faith of Stand Up Florida, who does so much good work for economic justice, to call out those who would oppress Floridians, to call the attention to FPNL, who's making billions, paying no taxes, and yet they want more out of your wallet. And now I'd like to bring you an interview with Ray Seaman, who is the online director of Progress Florida and also the founder and the genius behind Awake the State. So without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Ray Seamans. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome Ray Seamans, who is not only the online director of Progress Florida, he is also the founder and originator of Awake the State. Welcome, Ray.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's such a pleasure, my friend. I've had the honor to know you for several years now, and I know you've been big behind the scenes, but it's nice to see you taking a more out front position. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how Awake the State originated?
Well, Awake the State is essentially a product of the aftermath of the 2010 midterm elections in many ways. In Florida, we kind of ended up with the nightmare scenario of having Governor Scott being elected governor, albeit narrowly, and two-thirds Republican majorities in both houses of the legislature. So a lot of the sort of really extreme anti-middle class legislation that we had been able to sort of bottle up in the state Senate or get Governor Crist to veto, that those barriers were now gone, and a lot of the horrible stuff that was waiting in the wings now sort of had a clear trajectory to becoming law. So I've also been very involved, in addition to, obviously I work for Progress Florida, but I've also been very involved with sort of our growing public education movement in Florida, and there was a series of conference calls that took place after the election, and one of the recurring themes that kept coming up was we really ought to do something on the opening day of the legislative session to show Governor Scott and the legislature that we're serious about education funding, we're serious about reducing the testing burden on our students and on our districts, and we're serious about preserving the great programs that make our schools work so well. But we never really came up with an idea for that. And one morning, as I was kind of struggling to get out of bed, I began to think about this. The opening day of the legislative session was March 8th, and I started thinking of words that rhymed with eight, and Awake came to mind, perhaps unsurprisingly. And so that's sort of how the name was born, Awake the State, March 8th. In terms of what we actually did on March 8th, which was a series of rallies, locally led rallies around the state, protesting Governor Scott and his deep budget cut plans and just the overall anti-middle class trajectory of policy that was going on. I took inspiration from a couple of sources, perhaps one being Hands Across the Sand, which is sort of also a very organic grassroots movement that sprung up in 2010, started by a restaurant owner in the panhandle of Florida, who wanted to have a bunch of rallies on the coast of Florida protesting offshore drilling. And again, all these were locally led. Progress Florida was privileged to be a part of that, and so I sort of had a front row seat to sort of how that worked, and it was a big success. I sort of incorporated that model into Awake the State, where we knew that there were a lot of angry people out there. We knew that Governor Scott, politically speaking, was kind of a soft target. I mean, yes, he had been elected by Floridians, but he was not elected by a majority of Floridians, only by a plurality, and his approval ratings were not great, to say the least. So we knew people were very angry about what Governor Scott was proposing, very clear, overreaching, extreme policies on education, on health care. His rejection of the high-speed rail funding really angered a lot of people, and the 20,000 jobs that probably went with that funding. So, but it also just so happens that, I came up with this idea on a Friday morning. That Sunday, there was a group of progressives meeting in Orlando at a gathering called LegiCamp, which, Rick, you were a part of.
I remember it very well.
And, this is just sort of a gathering of progressives from around the state to figure out what we were going to do during the legislative session, because obviously we didn't have any levers of power or anything like that, but we still wanted to make our voices known during session. And I presented the concept of Awake the State at the end of camp with a room full of progressive organizers and activists from across the state. I was very nervous because I wasn't sure whether people were really going to grab onto this concept or not. And if I didn't get a whole lot of buy-in right then and there, the idea probably would have died right then and there, because obviously the whole idea was predicated on the fact that people would be organizing different events in their communities. But people really loved the idea, and just as pretty much as we were leaving that day, we had the origins of probably a half a dozen local rallies right then and there. Basically the month that we had between Legit Camp and the opening day of legislative session, less than a month, was kind of a whirlwind of activity, of setting up our Facebook presence, which shot up to thousands of likes within a couple of weeks, and the tremendous outpouring of support for Awake the State, not only from sort of the grassroots and progressives who were starting events and creating Facebook events for rallies in their community before we could even get our website up and running, but also, from state legislators, too. We had folks like Representative Scott Randolph and Rick Kreisman and Jeff Clemens and Mark Pafford, and other people who were very supportive, sort of from the sidelines, but were still very supportive of what we were doing and spreading the word to folks out in their communities. And so on March 8th, we actually had close to 40 rallies around the state of Florida, with over 15,000 people showing up and completely dominating local media coverage around the state, and really resetting the entire narrative about what that legislative session was going to be about. It wasn't just going to be a one-sided discussion about how much we needed to cut off from education and how many people we wanted to throw off of Medicaid and how many environmental protections we wanted to gut and get rid of. It was instead going to be about, there's also another side to this debate. There are people out there who very much disagree with this extreme anti-middle class agenda, and instead want corporations and big business to pay their fair share so that the rest of us, who work hard, can have the opportunity to succeed. So Awake the State really grew from there. I mean, it's a long way to answer your question there, Rick, but that's basically how it all got started.
Sometimes there's more than just a good idea. It's the good idea at the right moment to the right interest. And clearly, you struck an important note with this idea. It must give you tremendous, tremendous good feeling to see how much this idea has taken shape and grown on its own. I know you've recently been making some speeches out there and maybe taking the temperature, maybe throwing some new ideas out there. What's ahead for Awake the State?
What's ahead for us is kind of based on where we've been since March 8th. I mean, we've had all these... What happened organically, really, almost without my encouragement, without my doing, is a lot of people looked around after March 8th and realized, it was nice to have the teachers and the firefighters and the environmental folks and folks from the pro-choice movement and folks from the LGBT community and folks from labor, et cetera, actually talking with each other and organizing and working together. And wouldn't it be nice if we were coordinating like this all the time?
That's a hell of a coalition.
Indeed. So what ended up happening is good folks in Pinellas County were the first out of the gate with the sort of the local network idea, and Awake Pinellas was born, and not long after that you had networks springing up in key parts of the state, where particularly where the Awake the State rallies had been the biggest. In South Florida, in Miami, and Broward, and Palm Beach County, of course, but also in Tampa and Sarasota, where I am here in Marion County, that we also had networks spring up in Jacksonville as well. And what these folks have been able to do, a lot of which has been on their own. I mean, I've certainly helped out where I can, but I'm only one guy at the end of the day, and they've helped us with the three other statewide rallies we did after March 8th, including one in January 10th on the opening of this year's legislative session. So the focus ahead is kind of building on those strengths to the degree that we can. I mean, this is, Awake the State is very much sort of the the experiment that escaped the lab, if you will. And, you know, it's a very big thing now in terms of the people involved and the depth of these networks in terms of the contacts that they have and what they're doing. So building on our strengths in terms of, ensuring that our local networks are focused on state and local issues, economic issues, although there are obviously exceptions to that, but for the most part staying focused on what's going on at the state and local level, where there's just not a lot of resources and attention being paid by sort of the wider progressive movement. There's obviously a lot of focus right now on the presidential race and the national scene, which is important, goodness knows, but there's also a ton happening at the state and local level, and the Awake to State networks really help draw attention and focus to those issues.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Frank.
One of the things I think was so marvelous about it, and how it was able to capture such a broad coalition, is it wasn't hung on any one issue, it wasn't hung on any one group, it was something that there could be a really wide buy-in.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, one of the reasons why initially we were very focused on Governor Scott's budget-cutting plans was because it affected such a wide array of groups and interests, and that this would be an excuse, and I use this phrase all the time in the first few weeks and months of Awake to State, is it was an excuse to bring the different wings of the progressive movement sort of together under one umbrella, and to harness and leverage the strength of all these different groups, which, even though it's almost a cliche thing to say, you know, divided they can't do as much as they can if they were much more united in their opposition to what was going on. And plus, I should also say that one of the great things that has come out of these networks is that for the first time, these people are actually talking to one another, which I know does not sound like much, and it's not a big hurdle to overcome, but, you know, often folks who are involved on key issues just talk to folks sort of in that camp, and they forget that they are part of a wider progressive pro-middle class movement, and so there's a huge benefit to actually having folks from these different groups and interests meeting together almost on a monthly basis in most places, to actually talk and see what each other is doing and coordinating accordingly. And what folks have found is that, you know, boy, this is a lot easier from what we were doing before in terms of thinking we were just kind of the only forward-thinking people out there in our community. Turns out there's a whole lot more, and they've got resources, and they've got friends, and they've got contacts, and we can help each other.
That doesn't always work out that beautifully,
but I mean, you know, coalition work kind of is a double-edged sword sometimes, in that it can also raise sort of turf issues as well. But for the most part, the overwhelming reaction has been positive and very productive.
I was just going to say, I've been around this progressive movement, progressive coalitions for a long time, and I remember when unions and progressive activists or anti-war activists or green activists really, really did not see the commonality of interests. And to see that, to see them allied with teachers, to see them allied with homeless advocates, to see them aligned with, you know, union carpenters, for sake of argument, that to me was just really beautiful, beyond words beautiful, to see these coalitions come together like that. And I think Awake the State was the perfect vehicle for that. As of right now, are there any Awake the State events planned for either on election-related issues, on voter access-related issues, on even the, you know, the presidential or state elections level, or are you going to see that arise organically?
Between now and the election, a lot of the activity is coming out organically. You know, well, what I think, in my conversations with a lot of the network leaders and participants, you know, there's sort of an overwhelming consensus that, you know, we're going to do what we can in terms of raising the profile of these state and local issues that need to be raised, and also holding accountable those legislators who have voted with Rick Scott's really extreme anti-middle class agenda 100% of the time over the last couple of years. There's going to be some focus on those folks. And But I think the thrust of Awake the State is going to probably happen after the election, because what and this is something unfortunately many of us haven't been thinking about enough lately, is that there will be life after November. It may not seem like it right now, particularly for those who are very involved in campaigns. And there's a really critical period that's going to happen between post-election November and March of next year, when the legislature reconvenes, when the new legislature reconvenes. The risk that is out there, the danger that's out there, is that legislatures in off years, which 2013 will be an off year, tend to be much more extreme, much more radical than legislatures in election years, like 2012 or 2014. So all indications are, you know, the Democrats are going to gain some seats in the legislature, but they're not going to be in the majority. And Rick Scott's still going to be governor, you know, until at a minimum January 2015. So there's a lot of bad things that we were able to actually beat in 2012, thanks to a coalition of moderate Republican senators who were term limited, unfortunately, and the Democratic caucus in the state Senate, which were able to block a lot of nasty things like prison privatization, like the insidious parent trigger, along with other things that were added. So those were probably two real big ones. But those things will inevitably be brought back again in the next session, along with the fact that, you know, the budget picture still doesn't look that great, and we risk yet cutting yet more out of the budget, which means, you know, education and Medicaid will be in danger again, likely, along with whatever little environmental protections we have left. So there's going to be a real void there that's going to need to be filled, and Awake the State, thanks to these local networks, will probably be well positioned to fill that, in the sense of potentially doing rallies again in March of next year. I say potentially, we haven't finalized that yet, or other productive actions that we think we could take to advance a progressive and pro-middle class agenda.
Let me ask you a question. I, like you, have been so happy to see this coalition building, progressives coming together because of this kind of across-the-board Alec Koch brothers driven agenda. But I have to say to you, I wonder with this stranglehold on voting access that Florida is not alone in experiencing, I'm just wondering, with a severely tampered election, with a Justice Department that seems somehow reluctant to pursue this issue, I'm wondering just what kind of draconian results we're about to face, where the Republicans have basically, you know, prohibited an important, significant portion of the Democratic electorate from even voting.
Yeah, I don't know, and we won't know probably until after the election. And while there's certainly a lot of effort going in right now to ensuring people are voting, I mean, there's a tremendous effort happening in terms of getting progressive voters to vote by mail and vote early, and bank their votes now, so that on election day, if there are, you know, major shenanigans, that we can avoid a lot of that. But, you know, we won't know for certain, I think, until November 7th, day after the election. So, but I do think that as progressives, you know, we've really got to start preparing for the post-election world.
Sure.
Which I know, again, sounds a little crazy because, you know, we are sort of, our heads are really in this, are in the election right now, as we should be. You know, it's obviously our post-election plans will differ radically based on how things turn out, whether the president's reelected or not, and what Congress looks like, what the legislature looks like, and in some cases what our local governments even look like. You know, but we do need to start sort of looking ahead to that and sort of mentally preparing ourselves for another sort of pitched battle in early 2013, with again, which will still be a very radically extreme right-wing anti-middle class legislature.
Well, it seems that the stealth campaign against women's reproductive access, which we saw arise even though they never ran on it last time around, is reaching a new fever pitch with this interesting fellow in Missouri who is by no means alone in this prohibition of women's access to abortions, even contraception, the personhood approach, which Vice President candidate presumed Ryan was a co-signer of, co-sponsor of. I think we're facing a really interesting watershed, and you know, I hope that progressive votes are actually counted and Democrats can participate in elections. I won't ask you to break out your crystal ball, but you want to reflect for just a minute on this interesting anti-woman approach the Republicans are running on?
Yeah, it's amazingly counterproductive considering women are the majority of the voters who show up on election day. For progressives, you know, women essentially provide the margin of victory, whether it be national or statewide elections, and the Republicans are helping us pad that margin. So I think that's very nice of them. But I do also want to focus on the fact that here in Florida that we've got some big issues regarding women's health, notably Amendment 6, which is on people's ballots in November. And Amendment 6 is a really awful amendment, like practically all of the constitutional amendments that will be on your ballot, on your Florida ballot in November. Amendment 6 would allow tremendous political interference into women's basic health care decisions, and that's just something we really need to defeat and really just sort of make an example of to show that women and men in Florida are not going to tolerate this level of political interference in basic health care for women, and also I should add essential health care for women as well. And if I could actually just briefly plug their website, if you go to VoteNoOn6.com, you can actually learn more about that really awful amendment and get involved, and I encourage people to do that. There's also one that's kind of related, which is Amendment 8, which would basically remove the wall, the separation between church and state when it comes to funding and state funding of private religious institutions and programs. Certainly folks also need to get out and vote no on 8 as well, because that also would do tremendous damage to indirectly, but would do some serious damage to women's rights and women's health as well. So two issues to keep in mind if you're focusing on those things in Florida.
I heard an interesting discussion last night on Rachel's Maddow's show, where they were pointing out the fact that okay, the Republicans have alienated Hispanics. They've they're showing 0% of African Americans in favor of the Romney-Ryan ticket. And clearly, women are receiving no favors. Now, running against women, African-Americans, and Hispanics seems like a very odd political posture.
It is. It really is. And certainly, you know, in the next 10 to 20 years, that's just poison to any political party movement or ideas to be, you know, that much despised by such a demographic coalition that represents the majority of the country and will increasingly become almost a supermajority of the country in the coming decades. It's pretty bewildering, and it's clear that it's at least the short-term strategy anyway of the far right is to suppress the vote, which is what talking about earlier. Yeah, that's the only way that they could possibly win elections in the face of sort of this overwhelming demographic movement against them, which also I think points to something that progressives need to be focusing on as well, because oftentimes I think we spend a tremendous amount of time sort of in a defensive posture reacting to the latest outrage from the other side. Well, that's part of what we have to do. We also have to start building our own alternative and start to advocate for what we would like.
Absolutely.
As I think inevitably, knock on wood, I think inevitably progressives continue to gain power throughout the country in the coming years, largely lifted by those demographics that the right is ignoring or trying to suppress. So we have to start talking about not only removing a lot of the awful restrictions that the Voter Suppression Act has done here in Florida and similar versions have done in states throughout the country. We also need to start talking about expanding early voting. We have to start talking about same-day registration, that is, people can actually register to vote and vote on Election Day, as opposed to sort of having these dead zone periods where the books close, as the supervisors of elections say, and you can't register to vote in a certain election within a month's time of the election. These are reforms that other states have pursued with great success in terms of raising voter turnout and citizen participation in their elections. And, of course, we also have to start talking about the bigger stuff, too, which is, how campaigns are funded and the fact that big money continues to control a lot of our election outcomes and has a disproportionate influence, on our democratic society, and that's not something that can be sustained into the future. If we're going to have a democracy, we need to have a much more level playing field in our elections and in our public life. We don't have that right now. So we have to start also, in addition to, blasting the really draconian, awful, extreme anti-voting and anti-democratic proposals being pushed through legislatures and pushed by right-wing governors, we also have to start talking about, a progressive alternative that increases and expands our democracy as well as protects it.
Unlike that terribly misnamed Citizens United, which really should be translated into Corporations United, Billionaires United. A very terrible influence. I understand you're going to be out of state during the Republican shenanigans. You're going to a conference.
Yes. I've managed to conveniently, I have to go to a conference.
You know anything about a progressive roundup or something?
Yes, I know. I'll be escaping the Republican convention and Hurricane Isaac all at the same time. So, it's a nice time to get away.
Can you talk about the Progress Now meeting you're going to?
Yeah, well, it's there are people like me in states throughout the country, in terms of online directors for state-based progressive organizations. We're getting together to talk about, tactics and success stories and failures and lessons learned. So it should be an eventful few days.
Well, great. I want to thank you so much, Ray, for joining us. Ray is the online director for Progress Florida, also the founder of that very, very effective coalition, the Awake the State movement here in Florida. Thank you so much, Ray. Any final thoughts you want to leave?
I think we've done some remarkable things over the last couple of years in advancing sort of a progressive pro-middle class movement in Florida, but we certainly have our work cut out for us in the years ahead as we're going to make some minor gains, I think, in November, but there's a lot more work to be done and folks need to stay involved.
Thanks again, Ray.
Thanks, Rick.
And that was Ray Siemens of Progress Florida. A wonderful interview, as were those of all our other guests. I do want to mention also my colleagues in Progressive Broadcasting, our friends Gwen Holden-Berry of Here Be Monsters, Brian Stetton of Progress Toward Democracy, Susan Nylon, the Susan Nylon Report, all good progressive broadcasters you should support. And I also want to do a shout-out to our good friend Luis Cuevas, who's undergoing some healing right now. So everybody send some healing energy to our good friend and brother, Luis Cuevas of Progress Now. So thanks a lot. I think I've got, she was there and now she's gone. So don't forget, support our good friends, Gwen Holden-Berry of Here Be Monsters, Brian Stedden of Progress Toward Democracy, and Susan Nylon of the Susan Nylon Report. And hopefully Meredith will call back in just a second. Don't forget, this was Women's Equality Day. And one of these days, we're going to be able to say that our sisters, our mothers, our daughters are paid equally. And that'll be a day we want to celebrate very much. And here we go. Let's bring her on in. Hello, Meredith. Okay, well, that was almost Meredith. I think we're getting closer. Yeah, make sure that you stay informed about the things going on. Lots of opportunities to go to Tampa this week. Planned Parenthood's having the rally on Wednesday. We've got a peace rally on the 29th. We've got the on the 30th, War versus Human Needs in Boca. There's the Democracy Now! Appearing in Sarasota on the 31st. Okay, here we go. One more time with feeling. Hello, Meredith.
Hi, Rick. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, our pleasure, dear. Tell us, how did Women's Equality Day go at FAU?
I'm so glad that you asked. Women's Equality Day was a huge success. We had a great time. We had a lot of people there. We had a lot of different organizations. There were about 12 different organizations that participated and supported the event. We had the president of FAU, Mary Jane Saunders, come out. Susan Booker was our supervisor of elections. Susan Booker was our keynote speaker, and Pamela Goodman, from League of Women Voters, just did an incredible job of explaining to us and talking to us about the fact that Women's Equality Day only refers to women being equal in the right to vote, but the fact that we're not equal in so many other ways, and we need to work on that.
That is work that is left undone so far.
I wanted to share with you a little bit about what she gave us, the information that she gave us.
Good, thanks.
It's a lot of statistics, but it's stuff that makes sense, and I think people should know.
Good.
First of all, women are, and by the way, thank you so much. The conversation that you had just before me was absolutely brilliant, and I absolutely wholeheartedly agree with the sentiments of your previous caller. Fantastic. And I Awake the State was wonderful, including the meeting that you were referring to that I also met you at. So women make up 51% of the population, and only 16.8% of us are actually part of the government, which means about 90 seats in the United States Congress are women. So it's 17 seats in the Senate, only 17 seats in the Senate, and 73 seats in the House. Statewide, and through statewide seats, meaning local seats as well as state legislatures, the women hold about 23% of the elected office. And locally, out of 252 mayors in cities with over 100,000 in population, 44, or only 18%, are women.
Jeez.
This is really intense information. This is really, it's not good news. I will get to the good news, so no worries on that. The United States is 70th in the world in gender representation in government out of about 187 countries. So the good news is Florida is not doing as badly in comparison to other states in the union, so we're 12th in the United States. The reason that I bring this up is because we've started a women's... So, I work with Palm Beach County National Organization for Women and the president of the local chapter, and I'm also vice president of Florida now. In my spare time, they're laughing at me.
Funny the way you say that.
I've decided to support the National Women's Political Caucus. And the primary function and goal for the National Women's Political Caucus is to particularly get progressive pro-choice women elected. They do a lot of different things, including actually finding women to ask and asking those women to run for office. And it's pretty much statistically found that men it takes three asks to get a man to run for office, where approximately six asks will get a woman to run for office, believe it or not. So I wanted to share that with you because I thought it was such daunting numbers, and I'm so excited that we're going to actually start doing this work in Palm Beach County, and I have all kinds of statistics and stuff for the local races, but I didn't want to bore you to tears with numbers. So,
well, listen, we'll never be bored by good information about women's progress. So you're going to come back again real soon, and you're going to share some of those Palm Beach numbers with us. Do you hear?
Definitely, especially when we start changing those numbers.
Absolutely.
Mm.
So, what else was happening at the Women's Equality Day?
Well, you know, Morgan Stanley Smith Barney did such a great job. They underwrote the whole event, and we had Planned Parenthood there, of course, and they were advertising their big pink bus tours and the information that they're going to go. They've got plans to go to the RNC as well, and they're also doing some work having to do with rallies on the local level as well. So I'm sure you're going to have somebody from Planned Parenthood sometime soon. We had so many different organizations, and it was so wonderful. One thing that I thought was so great was that the Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies program at FAU. They've been struggling with finances, of course, because Rick Scott has cut funding to the school, and so they've been doing a huge job of just trying to get to make sure that that program is secure, and they're hoping to open up first of all, we need more ability to sponsor people to come into the program. And there's right now, they've got about 250, I think she said, people who are coming in as newcomers, and which is fantastic. They showed a fantastic video that also that I'm sure that you can have on the air as well, and it just demonstrated how the students what kind of an impact the program had on these students, some of whom were already in their own professions and some of whom were working their way into their professions, and it was, part of their study courses. So just amazing. These women are doing such an incredible job at FAU, and we really need to make sure that we support it on so many levels.
Well, that's good news. That's really good news. You know, I want to share a short story with you. When I was just a little chap and I was reading my history and I realized that my grandmother was a young woman. She was in her 20s when women's suffrage resulted in women achieving the vote. And I turned to her and she very much was a woman of Europe, a woman of the old country, so to speak. And I said to her, "Grandma, that must have been so amazing to be there when women got the right to vote." And this is when she really shocked me, and I realized just how far we all had to go. She said, "Oh, no, honey, I've never voted. I don't know enough to vote." She was a woman of such humility. And there, unfortunately, the social milieu she was in, she didn't, even though she had the right, she didn't feel she internalized that right. She didn't feel that she was educated enough to exercise that right. And I sort of said to myself, I've got to make sure that my daughters always make sure that they exercise their right. And I was so touched because I thought that, she had never felt that freedom. She'd never felt that liberty. And that was a sad thing. So I decided, boy, I was going to do everything I could to make sure that my sisters and that my fellow human beings had those rights that are promised but not always exercised. And I thank you for the work that you're doing.
Absolutely. You know, listen, women are specifically, you know, this is the wonderful thing about women is that we have a tendency of being able to justify ourselves out of certain things, whereas the opposite happens for men. You know, it's more about men have, I guess, generally speaking, of course, because men are not universally anything, but generally speaking, men tend to have more of an ego about things which don't consider the fact that they might not have knowledge or capabilities, as evidenced by Alan West's terms in Congress, for example. But, you know, but the fact that women tend to justify our way out of considering running for office is a real tragedy, because, you know, it's so important that, you know, when women have equal representation in government, you know, it's directly related to the policies on violence against women, on the promotion of economic quality and equality, on alleviating poverty among women, improving their mental, physical, and reproductive health. I mean, all these things are directly related to whether or not there's a woman there that's actually conscious of it and can bring it to the forefront of what we need to be working on in government. And the fact that so many of these incredibly qualified and brilliant women choose not to run, you know, when we really need their help in those capacities is really, you know, it's a detriment, and we really have a lot of work to do to make sure that women do recognize their worth and their abilities. And the fact is, you know, one of the things I love about my two of my favorite representatives, who shall remain nameless because I don't want to leave anyone else out of the mix, but two of my favorites had this wonderful thing about them where they could actually admit when they didn't know something, and they would actually call me and ask me, "Hi, can you explain this? I'm not sure about it." You know, and the fact that they didn't have an ego so big that they thought they knew everything was so, I mean, incredibly important, and it made them better people, and it made them better representatives.
Well,
you know, so I mean, it's so important. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, let me add my name to the list of all those people that must be urging you to run for office. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times, you've got to run for office, my dear. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm going to have to sign off. Thanks so much. Save the best for last. Thank you, Meredith Aukman, Vice President of Now Florida, President of Now Palm Beach. Thanks for all that you do, and thanks for being our last guest tonight. Good night, my friend.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And ladies and gentlemen, that's it for tonight. Progressive News Network has brought to you another fine selection of activists from across the state doing the good work that it takes to make this a better world. There is a better world to come in, because you and I are going to insist. Thanks so much. Good night.
There's a better world to come in. Tell you why. There's a better world to come in. Tell you why. We will beat them on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world that's coming, I'll tell you why. There's a better world that's coming, don't you see? Better world that's coming, don't you see? When we'll all be union, and we'll all be free. There's a better world.
See you next week. Progressive News Network.
There's a better world that's coming, don't you know, no, no. There's a better world that's coming, don't you know. I'm a union man in a union war. It's a union world I'm fighting for. There's a better world that's coming. There's a better world.
On behalf of myself, Rick Spezak, News Director, on behalf of my co-producer, Mickey Royce, I thank you and ask you to join us next week on Progressive News Network brings you even more of the fine minds that are building a better world.
There's a better world that's coming, tell you why. Better world is coming, tell you why. I marching out of battling. You can hear the chains are rattling. There's a better world that's coming. Tell you why. Now there's a better world that's coming, and there's a better world that's coming.
See you next week.
There's a better world that's coming. I'll tell you why. Better world that's coming. I'll tell you why. We'll beat them on the land, in the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world that's coming. I'll tell you why. Well, there's a better world that's coming. Don't you see? Better world that's coming. Don't you see? When we'll all be union, and we'll all be